7, page 81 and 82, concerning John Hoy. After John Hoy gave me the information on Thompson's and other information, I went to Judge Gunn and talked to him about this. I didn't request that he give John Hoy a break, but told him what he had done and that he was responsible for solving the T. Eugene Thompson case. And I thought Judge Gunn was impressed with this. He said he would take it under consideration when he sentenced John Hoy. John Hoy, when he was sentenced for the robbery, was given a certain sentence. I don't remember at this time, but he was put on probation and he agreed to go out to Los Angeles where his brother was working, and his brother had a job for him driving a Coca-Cola truck, delivery truck. And John did go there. I never heard from him for a long, long time until I got this letter from him. And he was doing fine. He had married, of course, and had a child. And he never got into any further trouble that I was aware of. Later on, when I was at Plymouth, probably about halfway through my tenure out there, he and his wife were visiting relatives in the city here in Minneapolis, and he came out to Plymouth, and he and his wife both came out, and I met her. I think she was a Latino gal, a very beautiful gal, a very nice gal too. We went out to lunch and had a spend an hour or two talking over old times, and he wanted his wife to meet me because he felt that I had given him a tremendous break and that it turned his life around, and hopefully it did. I don't take credit for that, but he apparently gave me credit for his turnaround. The other information he gave was on various guns that he knew of that were around, machine guns, some dope peddling that was going on, and where he picked up the information on T. Eugene Thompson while he was in the county jail. There were other prisoners there at the time that were talking about it and knew about the Sharp Ingram Butler connection. And that was the information he passed on to me because, well, he wanted me to have it, and I think he felt obligated toward to me also. On page 82, there's some newspaper articles on some of our patrolmen in Plymouth grabbing some suspects after a burglary at a residence out in Plymouth, and they're trailing the two of three people for a long ways through snow, and eventually making the arrest and my awarding a commendation. Out in Plymouth there were many kind of PR appearances and talks before various groups, and One of the things I did was the JCs had a fundraising softball game, and I was Billy Martin was going to appear at this game, and did, and I was the they had a regular umpire, or the Mayor Hildy was the umpire behind home plate. I was the umpire on first base, and Fran Bauer, the fire chief, was the umpire on third base. It was a fun night, and we enjoyed it. About this time, I attended Chiefs convention in Miami, and while there, during an off afternoon, I had a chance to play the Durrell Blue Course, famous for the Durrell Open. That was the course used there, a very difficult one and very long. On page 84 and 85 are some campaign literature on the local politics out there. One of them, Mayor Hildy and I were talking at the outside of a squad car, and Lon Heinitz, a very capable individual who was our state representative from out there. There's also a piece of his campaign literature. 86 and 87 were some articles about some of the good work being done by the officers out in Plymouth. And on page 86, there was also a picture showing Eugene Wilson and presenting a watch to John Romlin. John Romlin was the chief secretary for many years. He was secretary for several chiefs prior to my tenure. I know he was secretary for Pat Walling and for Buzz Winslow, and probably for Tom Jones also. Was a very capable individual, and I trusted him completely, and I never had any reason to doubt his integrity, and he knew an awful lot about the operation of the department, and he was very helpful in the running of the department. There is a remembrance card given at the funeral of Walter D. Larson. He was an uncle of mine who was very interested in my career, and while I was chief, used to visit every once in a while with information on what he had learned. He kind of had a hobby of trying to solve the DeVito murder over in St. Paul, or try and locate DeVito's grave. He was allegedly murdered by some of the hoods around Minneapolis of Italian descent, like Johnny Azzoni, Rocky Lupino, and others who hung around together and operated in this area. 1990, there was a program for Ed Mattson's recognition dinner on his retirement from the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and going to another job on the Governor's Crime Commission. Ed Mattson was one of the first 15 patrolmen put on the Minneapolis Police Department on the same examination I took, where I was number 46, I think it was. And he had a career in the Minneapolis department and then later retired and went with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and was with them for a number of years. Also on page 91, some certificates certifying membership in the Minnesota Association of Civil Defense Directors. '92, there's an article about a start of a police school liaison program out there in the suburbs. It include Plymouth, New Hope, Robbinsdale, and Golden Valley. It is a good program, and I was very pleased to see it start up out in the suburban area. Page 92, there is a letter I received from Arvid M. Falk, Assistant City Attorney, stating that the lawsuit by Eugene Wilson against me had been dismissed, and so that ended the Gene Wilson lawsuit. 94. There's a greeting card from the Plymouth police personnel wishing me holiday greetings and being somewhat complimentary to me was pleasant to receive. Also on page 94, there is articles announcing the appointment of Jim Willis as city manager to replace Angus Crawford, who had passed away suddenly of a heart attack. Angus had been city manager for not too long, I believe less than a year. And he and I got along fine and no problems out there. And James Willis, the new manager, came from Battle Creek, Michigan. And in Battle Creek, Michigan, he was involved with the police department in a labor dispute during which a lot of patrolmen were fired and there were other problems. So there was some apprehension in our department about his hiring. And I was wondering about it too. But as he came and I worked with him and got to know him, he was an excellent city manager. He and I got along very well. I respected him very much. He had a lot of knowledge and background and a considerable amount of it in law enforcement. Not working in law enforcement himself, but being in charge of various police departments in his career as a city manager. He continued to be city manager during the rest of my career in Plymouth, and when I left, I had nothing but the highest regard for him and for his ability. And I was sorry to leave, and would miss him because he was cooperative and gave the department a lot of assistance and built it up over the years of his administration, which was needed, of course, because the city of Plymouth was growing rapidly at that time and continues to grow up until the present day. 96 and 97, there are some articles about snowmobiles and our problems with snowmobilers out in Plymouth. In order to better be able to patrol and hold violations down and that sort of thing, the Polaris Snowmobile Corporation, who had an operation in Plymouth, or their manufacturing in Plymouth, donated a snowmobile for our use, and we set up snowmobile patrols where our men patrolled on the snowmobile at various times and kind of shifted around at various times and days of the week and so forth, so that snowmobilers out there wouldn't have any idea of exactly when the snowmobile was out with police personnel on it to do enforcement duty. It worked fairly good, and though it would have worked a lot better if we were able to have somebody out there permanently in the winter months during the peak of the season. But it had a good effect on snowmobilers, and we had very few problems with them. On page 99, another newspaper article in which I commended two Plymouth police officers for an apprehension of burglars. On page 101, there's a funeral remembrance card in the memory of Morris Smith. He was a uniform captain that when I made uniform captain and was assigned to the headquarters precinct, and he was my partner as a captain working three shifts at headquarters. Very fine gentleman, worked for many years as the secretary of the Retired Police Officers Association, and did a lot of good work for his retired fellow officers in that position. At page 102 and 103, there's article and a letter concerning the death of Joseph Pudlick, a Minneapolis police officer who was gunned down by a mentally deranged man when he and another officer were trying to apprehend him in order to get him into a mental institution or program. Joe Pudlick was a patrolman who came on about the same time I did in the Minneapolis Police Department. He walked the Chicago Lake Beat, and I walked an adjoining one at various times, and we got to know one another. He was a fine man, a very good police officer, and the tragedy with him in the department was that he didn't have veterans preference, and so he was unable to get promotions to advance in the department. But he was an excellent officer, fine person, and his hobby was doing mechanical work, and he was an excellent automobile mechanic, and helped many of the police officers out with his advice and help when they were repairing their automobiles. On page 104 is a picture of Patricia Butler, the Plymouth PD police secretary. She was the police secretary out there when I came to Plymouth, and she's a very efficient gal, pleasant to be around, and she knew everything about the Plymouth Police Department and was very helpful to me in my early days and also the later ones in the Plymouth Police Department, till she left to marry. On page 105, there's a letter from Vance DeMong, Executive Vice President of the Human Rights Commission, and actually he's Executive Vice President of North Memorial Hospital, but he serves on the Human Rights Commission, or did serve on it, former chairman of it, and he wrote a nice letter of commendation for the department and for myself. It was deeply appreciated, and Vance DeMong was a very progressive executive vice president for North Memorial Hospital, and instituted many programs that assisted fire and police departments in the suburban area. And he was very progressive in his ideas, and actually I thought he was probably a police buff to some extent, because he liked to get out on the scenes of the various incidents that his ambulances responded to, and an excellent person in my opinion. On page 106, there are articles concerning the first sirens, civil defense warning sirens being installed in Plymouth. They are to be used for various emergency uses, but mainly to be activated in event of a national emergency, and also to be activated by the Civil Defense Authority in the event of severe weather in the summertime, tornado alerts and that sort of thing. Also, on page 106 is an article and a picture concerning the Plymouth JCs honoring me by presenting me with an outstanding service award, and I accepted it on behalf of all the men in the department, which of course really earned the award, in my opinion. On page 107, I was appointed to the Lake Minnetonka Mental Health Center Incorporated, which I served on their as a member of their board up until my retirement from Plymouth. It was interesting and created policy and tried to assist citizens with this mental health board, and it was satisfying, and I was in good experience. I'm glad I was appointed and enjoyed serving on the board. On page 108, there's a little clipping concerning my election to the office of president of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. I had gone up through the chairs, third vice, second vice, first vice, and now president. And I had been interested in this organization and attended their conventions faithfully, and any other their training programs that they held once a year, and enjoyed my association with chiefs from all over the state. It was a good organization and very progressive, and it operates to the present day with many innovations that they have been responsible for in law enforcement. They are very progressive and do an excellent job and conduct some excellent training sessions for all the chiefs in the state of Minnesota. Also on page 108, we started a PIN program, which is a permanent identification number program, where people take engravers home with them and engrave this number on all their property. And it's a very good, and they receive a decal that they can place on their doors. This is a very good prevention program, in my opinion. And it was the beginning of something that developed over the years. And I will comment on it further when the program starts that succeeded the PIN program. 110, there's a couple clippings where it states that Joe Rosinko resigned to join a security firm. Joe Rosinko was my partner through my days on the homicide squad in Minneapolis department. He was an excellent partner, and we got along fine. He was a more volatile type individual than myself, and the good guy, bad guy thing on interrogation of various suspects worked well between us and with us. And we solved a lot of crime and did a lot of good work. My only regret talking about Joe Rosinko is that I was so politically naive when I became chief in Minneapolis that I didn't have the opportunity or push appointing Joe Rosenko as inspector of detectives at that time. I really needed someone who was I was close to and that I could trust and that knew me over the years. I would have had complete confidence in Joe. And my only problem there was I thought he might possibly get in trouble or get me in trouble because of his volatile personality, because he spoke right out what he was thinking. He told you. And in some situations, particularly probably some personnel matters or racial things, complaints against the department and that kind of thing, I might have been handicapped with him in that position. But as inspector detectives, he would have very little continuation, scrapbook 7, page 110, comments about Joe Rosenko. As inspector detectives, he would have had very little contact with that type of situation or problems of that nature. So I would have been very well served if I had appointed him inspector detectives. I know that Joe probably resented not being appointed and was estranged from me for a number of years because of it. And now, second guessing myself at this late date, I would have been a lot better off if I had had him in there as inspector detectives to offset problems with other top-level positions in the department. 111, there's some brochures, letter, and other stuff concerning the Duff's Celebrity Golf Tournament. Plymouth Police got involved in this because Highway 55 run through Plymouth and Rolling Green Golf Course was located just off Highway 55 beyond to the west of the Plymouth city limits a few blocks, and there were traffic problems that they expected, and so the Plymouth Police Department cooperated with the Celebrity Golf Tournament and had some men assigned when the traffic got heavy. Also on page 111 there's an article which tells about Richard G. Held, the special agent in charge of the Minneapolis office of the FBI, being transferred to Chicago. Dick Held and I were well acquainted and got along well together. He was a very capable special agent in charge and had the respect of all of his agents, in my opinion. And I kept in touch with him and he with me until just a couple years before his death, and I did attend his funeral a number of years later. He served in Chicago for quite a while, and then his health, and moved down to Illinois, and then his health started becoming bad, and he came back to the Plymouth area where he lived till he passed away. An excellent special agent in charge and very personable individual. On page 113, there's my first license as a Minnesota peace officer. They started this in order to control the quality of personnel becoming police officers in the state of Minnesota, and this is under the in charge is the Minnesota Peace Officer Training Board, and Clyde Sorensen was chairman of the board, and Carl Pearson was its executive director. And those who already were officers in the state of Minnesota were grandfathered in, and this was my certificate or my license to practice as a police officer in the state of Minnesota. On page 112 and 113 are a couple articles about my participating in a couple of golf tournaments. I enjoyed golf and liked to play, and still do to this day. I used to, when I was out in Plymouth, bring a bag lunch from home, and I would eat that at the office, and then during my lunch hour, as soon as I was through, I would head out and go to a driving range in located in Plymouth and hit a few balls during my lunch hour. I think that relieved a lot of tension, plus I think it was good for my health, and I enjoyed it. On page 116 are the official papers and letters appointing me to the Governor's Crime Commission on Crime Prevention and Control. It was effective February 8, 1973, and I served on this commission and enjoyed it very much. On page 118, there is a picture of the city council and the mayor, and also on page 119, concerning some publicity about Operation Identification, there is a picture of Marion Kirchberg, who succeeded Pat Butler as police secretary for the Plymouth Police Department. Very nice gal, very efficient, pleasing personality, and I enjoyed my association with her. And she was with us for a number of years till she resigned for another position where she would make more money. On page 120, There's an article about the death of Eugene Bernath. I attended the wake, and he was in charge of the Detective Bureau when I was appointed detective, and he ran our tails off doing investigations for him. And I had a lot of respect for him. He was an excellent detective. He spoke with a Swiss accent, but there are many stories about him, and he was a legend around the Minneapolis Police Department, and a bulldog when he started investigating a particular crime or homicide or what have you. He would work long hours, and you could expect him around the department at any time of the day or night, even when he was inspector of detectives. And he was always ready to help on any investigation. I think he gave me an excellent start as a young detective by his demonstration of his devotion to duty and his work ethic, the way he would work long hours and be enthusiastic all through a case. Also on page 120, there's a picture in an article concerning the city of Plymouth getting a state reimbursement check for a second siren in Plymouth. Wally Halstead and Bill Flynn are in the picture with me. On page 121, there is a letter from Clarence Kelly, the director of the FBI, who had been recently appointed. I wrote him a letter concerning his appointment and how how I thought he would do in the job, and backing him 100%. I got to know him through various police conferences when he was chief of police in Kansas City and I was chief in Minneapolis. And he and I, our wives, became acquainted, and I was tickled to death to see that he was appointed as director of the FBI. He will do a good job, and did do a good job there, in my opinion. On page 121 and 122, there's some publicity about a burglary ring that Plymouth Police Department helped break up, and the officers involved were commended by me. I made it a point to issue as many commendations as I could without cheapening the award. And I feel that it is a great morale builder, and has paid off in Plymouth with the efforts of the Plymouth Police Department. They work hard, and they are eager to help the citizens and to give a professional, efficient image to the Plymouth Police Department, and I think the commendations help do this. Chapbook 7, on pages 124 and 125, there are some articles about early Plymouth history. Neil Nielsen, a patrolman in the Plymouth Police Department, has a hobby of collecting artifacts from the historical sites in Plymouth. He has a metal detector and he knows all the places where homes, businesses, churches, cemeteries, and schools, that sort of thing, were located in Plymouth. And he has covered them all with his metal detector and has done some minor type digging in places that would seem to be fruitful to pick up artifacts. He is a member of the Plymouth Historical Society, and his interest has been very helpful to other people in Plymouth interested in the history of Plymouth and also family history. He is an excellent policeman and represents the Plymouth Police Department in a very efficient, capable, and courageous manner. He has won a number of commendations for excellent police work and for courage. Page 125, there's a small article, a clipping from the newspaper, about a problem at the Hennepin County Workhouse. This is a good time to mention how the Plymouth Police Department and the Hennepin County Workhouse and their personnel cooperate. The workhouse is located in Plymouth, but it is Hennepin County property. At one time it was the Minneapolis City Workhouse and farm, where individuals were sent mainly for misdemeanor offenses to work on the farm while serving their sentence. They were sentenced out there by municipal judges usually, and they ran the farm and under supervision of permanent employees of the institution. Many of the Skid Row occupants and people who lived there and celebrated there would want to go out to the city workhouse during the cold months of the year, and they would get drunk and or commit some other offense and hope to be sent out there, and usually the judges would oblige by giving them 60 or 90 days in the workhouse so that they would be out of the cold and taken care of during the cold winter months. when Hennepin County took it over, they took charge, and the workhouse personnel would meet with us. I've met with the superintendent of the workhouse, had lunch with them over there, and discussed our problems and what we would do in various situations that might arise, such as escapes, riots, and what have you. And this has been a good way to keep in touch and to know what each will do in certain circumstances. on page 126, there's an article entitled Messiah Pipes Up. This is an article about another one of our veteran patrolmen, Bob Levins, who has a hobby of rebuilding and repairing pipe organs. He is also very interested in pipe organ music and attends many concerts in the area and to distant cities. His wife also has this interest, and it works out great for him. Bob Levins is a son of a Minneapolis policeman, veteran policeman, Virgil Levins, who worked for many, many years in the juvenile division in Minneapolis. He also had two brothers that were on the Minneapolis Police Department who attained the rank, I believe, of lieutenants, both of them. On page 128, there is an article about vandalism. This was a problem that was fairly severe in Plymouth, though a lot of attention was paid to it, probably overly so, because of the lack of other crime in Plymouth. The article is written by Carol Pine. She was a young lady of considerable ability and a writer who wrote very well, and I believe later continued to write after she terminated her employment with the newspapers. She wrote independently. And there were a number of articles, poetry, and books that she was writing, and she was the kind of a person that, as a newspaper person, you could trust, and she never double-crossed me at any time on any story that we might want held back for a reasonable amount of time in order to help the investigation. I was impressed with her. Page 129, there is an article about the Wayzata High School, their distributive education class. 36 seniors who gathered toys, money, food, and made up baskets to be distributed by social workers in the Plymouth area who knew the various people who needed some help at the Christmas season. The department enjoyed helping out, and also the students appeared to really take hold of this project and do an excellent job. On page 127, there's an article about the Chaplaincy Corps. I organized one in Plymouth with the help of Vance DeMong, the executive director of North Memorial Hospital, who furnished meeting space and assisted with his hospital chaplain, the Reverend Vern Bittner. This organization got started, and it was very helpful to the police department, because there's many times when a police department, because of press of other calls and business, cannot stay at the scene of a tragedy to give comfort, counseling, and that sort of thing. And of course, we aren't trained in this area either, except what we've picked up over the years by being present at many of these type situations. The chaplaincy corps rode along in squads, and they were on call at any time when the officers thought they were needed, and they did a lot of good work for us. Page 131, there is a picture and a brief article at the bottom of the page showing me trying to round up some cattle that escaped after a traffic accident. Assisted fire department, other officers, and citizen observers who were in the area who tried to help also. I know one of a TV cameraman was there, and while trying to round up the cattle, I backed up and fell down on my rear end over a small hump in the earth there at that particular traffic scene. The TV caught this incident on film, and I received many phone calls from citizens, former colleagues of mine, and received some razzing from the Plymouth area and the Plymouth PD officers also. It was an interesting time, one that I had never been involved with before, and but it turned out all right. We got them all rounded up. I think the last one was a young bull who managed to get all the way down towards Medicine Lake and charged the officer several times, but he finally was corralled and brought back to the scene. Starting on page 133, 135, 136, 137, 138, and 139 are various items concerning my high school class's 40th reunion. It was held out at the Honeywell Country Club out south of Minneapolis, and I was one of the speakers on the program. It was a very enjoyable time. It coincided with the Roosevelt High School's 50th anniversary. So there was some material there from celebration also. On page 136 and 137 are a couple certificates. One where the National Academy held a sectional retraining session in Milwaukee, and I attended, as did Marion. And the other was the refresher course down at the FBI National Academy that lasted about a week, and excellent course, and gave the FBI, of course, an opportunity to renew acquaintances with some of the people and to give them a chance to give us some training and tell us how we could help them more than what we do already. Page 139, there's a small article about a police auction that we held every year. When I first came out to Plymouth, this was one of the first year I was there. I had to act as an auctioneer at one of these police auctions, and I did it every year after that. But that was a real experience. I gradually got into it. I started pretty slow with my chant or whatever you call it, and I got through it okay. I was very slow. I tried to add some humor to the situation, like when I described a bicycle, I said it would run like a thief in the night, and other remarks like that to increase the interest. Our main aim was to get rid of all the property, because we didn't have the storage space in those early days or even later days in the Plymouth Police Department to store very much stuff. It was mostly items that we had confiscated or unclaimed property of various kinds and that sort of thing. Page 141, there is a funeral pamphlet or leaflet that they pass out in memory of Glenn Page. Glenn Page was a detective in the Minneapolis Police Department who worked the auto theft car when I was working homicide, and I knew him pretty well. A very good detective and a fine man. Sorry to see him succumb at such a young age. He deserved to live many, many, many years beyond what he did. Also on page 142 is another funeral pamphlet for Roy Hawkinson. He was my uncle. My